The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield, your number one news and talk station.
The Money Show, brought to you by Old Mutual. Get great financial advice. Old Mutual is a licensed financial services provider. Kaz Kavadi, on an important non-judgment today. Absolutely crucial. A lot of people getting the wrong end of the stick, including the BLF. Congratulating Oak Bay and the Gupta family for a stunning victory against Pravin Gordhan. What nonsense. But anyway, we'll talk about that and explain why it is complete garbage. And then we'll talk to the chief scientific officer at Philip Morris International, Manuel Paich, this evening on The Money Show. We've got market commentary. We'll play you some of the best bits of The Money Show from the week that was. And there's 2,000 Rand up for grabs in the Brutal Biz Quiz this Friday night.
The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield.
So what is Oak Bay? I mean, is Oak Bay a comedy club? I think there used to be a company called Oak Bay listed on the JSE before it suspended its own shares. Might have had something to do with mining it. But anyway, Oak Bay should go into the comedy business. And I say this because one of the funniest things you will see today is a statement from the company berating Pravin Gordhan for wasting valuable court time. Remember, he brought an application which he wanted the courts to instruct him to not intercede with the banks on behalf of the Guptas. The courts have now refused to hear this matter. They say it's patently illegal for any government minister to do that. It's critical of the Mineral Resources Minister, Mosbenzi Zwane, for doing it. And remember, it was the President who instructed four of his ministers to talk to the banks to get the Gupta bank accounts reopened, and the banks refused. And then this so-called interministerial committee was formed, and the ministers were instructed to go and talk to the banks on behalf of the Guptas, and Mosbenzi Zwane most certainly did do that. Pravin Gordhan refused, of course, and went to court to get the court to tell him not to do it. Now, Oak Bay is on its high horse, claiming that victory, and they've got no right to claim a victory here at all. The court not only said the alleged interference was unlawful, but it cast doubt on the legitimacy of the interministerial committee. It's a big slap in the face for the president. It's a big slap in the face for Mosbenzi Zwane and anybody who is supportive of it. The court said there's no statute that empowers a member of the national executive, such as the minister, to intervene in private bank client disputes. Neither does the Constitution confer such powers. Kaz Kavadi is the Managing Director of the Banking Council, Banking Association, I beg your pardon, of South Africa. He's on the line to us from Joburg this evening. The court refusing to waste its time to hear the case, and it really does, I suppose, Kaz Kavadi, affirm the rights of the banks, your members, to have private, independent interactions with their clients.
Absolutely, Bruce. I mean, I couldn't have put it any better than you did early on. I think that what the non-judgment, as you call it, is basically saying is that the relationship between the bank and its client is between the bank and the client, and the regulator, where the regulator needs to get involved, that no member of the executive has the legal ability to actually intervene in that relationship, which is what the previous minister asked the court to actually rule on. That the Constitution also does not allow the minister to do that. I think over and above that, the court, as you said, indicated that if the minister had one issue that he needed the court to clarify, the issue of the inter-ministerial committee headed up by Minister Zwane. And the court was clear that the inter-ministerial committee's attempt to actually interfere in client-bank relationship was a violation of the law. And so what this state of affairs is actually saying is that, look, it confirms the relationship between the bank and the client stayed between the bank and the client. We have institutions in this country like the Financial Intelligence Center Office that actually has put FICA into, have administered FICA, and they will ensure that banks actually conduct their business in a way that if they do have suspicions on any client, they report it to FICA. And we have a good regulator who's proactive and oversees the regulation of the banks. And so, that's all we need. We don't need interference from government or anybody else.
Now, so, Kaz, what happens if I do have a dispute with my bank? My bank decides to close my account for whatever reason. I feel that decision is unjust. I go through the banking ombudsman, and the banking ombudsman rules against me. I've got the right to go to court and say, magistrate, judge, please will you ask the bank to open up my account again? And the magistrate will then weigh up the evidence in the case in a court of law. Yet the Guptas have chosen not to pursue that route. They've sought to pursue political intervention.
Yeah, look, you have every right to go to court. I'm not going to comment on the individual case I'm quite clear that others shouldn't be interfering in bank client issues. I'm not going to do that. But any client, if a client feels aggrieved in the way the bank has treated the client, the client can go to the ombudsman if it's within the jurisdiction of the ombudsman, or the client can go to court. And I've publicly said that if a court finds any bank conducting its business outside of law and regulation, certainly the BaFin is not going to defend that bank, and then the law must take its course. So we have structure and mechanisms in this country for people who are aggrieved to actually go to those structures and mechanisms. And so I think that what this non-judgment says and what it confirms is exactly what we've been saying for quite some time.
Kaz Kavadia, thank you. Managing Director at the Banking Association of South Africa. It's precisely what Pravin Gordhan wanted. Pravin Gordhan wanted a judgment which said that the president was wrong to appoint this interministerial committee, and that Mosebenzi Zwane, who has been linked to all kinds of dodgy dealings, including a deeply flawed mining charter, should never, ever, ever have crossed the threshold of the banks to go and intervene on behalf of the Guptas. Maybe those emails are real, after all.
702 and Cape Talk, The Money Show.
Why is it that the share prices of the world's biggest cigarette companies have not gone up in smoke since the announcement by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration that they want to make cigarettes less addictive? You make cigarettes less addictive, those that are addicted may smoke four at a time to get their hit, and maybe those who would otherwise have started smoking wouldn't bother. There was an immediate drop in the share prices of cigarette companies, but they quickly recovered, and they might not be as lofty as they were before the U.S. Food and Drug Administration decided to intervene, but certainly it's not a disaster. Maybe one of the reasons is because of the technology that the cigarette companies are investing in. The chief scientific officer at Philip Morris International, these are the guys that make Camel cigarettes, is Manuel Peach. I hope I got your name right, Manuel. You're heading home after a visit to South Africa. What have you been doing here?
Well, good evening. I've been talking with some potential collaborators about the ICOS and the technology that will allow us to create products to switch smokers to less harmful alternatives.
Well, there's no pretense in the cigarette industry anymore, is there, that about the addictiveness of cigarettes and the harmful effects of cigarette smoking? I mean, nobody's pretending anymore, are they?
No, nobody's pretending anything. I mean, we know cigarettes are dangerous. They're a dangerous product. They cause serious disease. And we also know that cigarettes are addictive. And those things are clear.
And so what you're working on as the chief scientific officer at the makers of Camel cigarettes is the thing you call ICOS. And these are, I suppose, I mean, for those of us who are not smokers, but we see the vape stores around and we see people sucking steam out of a device to get some sort of satisfaction from a smoking type experience. I mean, that's what you're creating. You're creating these vaping devices.
We're developing a range of products. Some of them are based on e-liquids, like vaping devices, and some of them are designed to extract the nicotine from tobacco through heating it to precisely at a lower temperature and not burning. Because the issue about smoking, the major issue, what really causes the disease, is the combustion of the tobacco, which creates all these harmful constituents that people inhale.
I mean, is there any sort of proof, I mean, it may be too early to tell, that these ICOS devices and similar devices are any less harmful than the tobacco? I mean, you've done the scientific studies, but you don't have FDA approval, I don't think, certainly not yet, for the use of these devices.
Well, the scientific demonstration that a product, whether it's ICOS or another, is less harmful than a cigarette is a relatively long process. It's composed of a number of studies ranging from chemistry to analyze the vapor, to a toxicology to clinical studies. Today, what we can say is that the totality of the evidence that we have collected is very encouraging, and that we are likely contemplating a product that is less harmful, a less harmful alternative to cigarettes. Now, obviously, once all of this data has been assembled, it has to be submitted to a regulator, in this particular case, the Federal the Food and Drug Administration in the United States. They have received our dossier, and they are in the process of doing a full scientific evaluation of that dossier.
Well, what is the argument, though, Manuel? I mean, is it that this is a product that is designed to get smokers off cigarettes? It may very well be harmful. Nicotine remains addictive. However, it is less harmful than the alternative, and therefore the FDA should approve it. I mean, is that the basis of the argument, simplistically put?
The basis of the argument is that this is less harmful, that it is less harmful than a conventional cigarette. We also have to consider that any alternative to cigarettes are not harmless or risk-free. That is absolutely clear. And that as long as we have nicotine in these products, there is going to be addictiveness. So these are the facts.
And how does the FDA then approve something that it knows to be harmful, even if it is less harmful than a cigarette? I mean, it's quite a hard argument to sell, isn't it?
Yes and no. I mean, we all know that if we reduce the emission of a toxic substance, we reduce the exposure of the individual to the toxic substance, and therefore we have a reduction of the health effects. Now, if these reductions are significant, and here we are talking about a product that reduces the formation or the emission of the harmful constituents by more than 90 to 95%, we ought to contemplate a, and we know from our clinical studies that we are reducing the exposures of the individuals to these harmful constituents in a concomitant manner, in a manner that is even very close to what you observe in those people who stop smoking during those clinical studies, supplemented with the data from our toxicology and lab models, which show that the IQOS vapor causes much less damage to living organisms in the laboratory. These things taken together are indicative, before we go on to the market, that IQOS is likely to be less harmful than conventional cigarettes.
Manuel Peach,
has then to be complemented with a post-market surveillance and further studies to verify that what we think is the case before we put it on the market actually is verified once we are on the market for a longer period of time.
It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Manuel Peach, thank you very much. Chief Scientific Officer at Philip Morris International, the guys that make Camel cigarettes, and now are developing this IQOS technology, the less harmful alternative. It is interesting to me that, going to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration and saying to them, please will you give us approval for something that we know to be harmful? It's just 90% less harmful than cigarettes. One wonders whether or not they're going to go for it. And once they go for it, then they're endorsing effectively the product because it's less harmful to smokers. But will it encourage people who don't smoke to start using vapes? I mean, it's a silly looking thing to do, but they may very well get a cool factor to it. And then has the FDA then overstepped the mark on that particular front? Remember the ads where doctors used to endorse cigarette smoking in the 1950s? Menthols are better for you than the other cancer sticks. It's that kind of thinking, I wonder. But yep, Chief Scientific Officer of PMI, Philip Morris International, Manuel Peach.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Well, Bidvest coming out with a bizarre statement today. Bidvest announces the resignation of Mr. Brian Joffe as a non-executive director of the company with immediate effect. Bidvest expresses its appreciation to Mr. Brian Joffe for his contributions over many years. That's it! This is the guy who founds Bidvest and is the chief executive of the business for 30-odd years. The guy who founded the company, you would think they would have put in a little bit more effort than that to say, cheers, Brian, thanks so much for all the hard work you've put in and thanks for creating us. But it's quite a terse statement, and is leading to some speculation online that there's been a bit of a fallout, perhaps. Brian Joffe did step down as chief executive, but stayed on the board, and recently did launch his Long for Life business on the JSE. Andrew Bryson from Sunland Private Wealth, dare you speculate as to what is going on here? Because I thought it was a little bit of a cold, cool statement from Bidvest saying cheers to Brian.
Hi, Bruce, good evening to your listeners. Yeah, look, that is surprising that I guess it's so abrupt, but we have seen Brian stepping away from the old Bidvest structure. He did sell his shares in Bidcorp. And now I guess he's got a new focus, and he's wanting to give that Long for Life share or company his full attention. So possibly, you know, that's been a decision, and you know, he's decided that he needs to step away and give it his all.
Yeah, one wonders if he's decided it, or and maybe the company's grumpy with him for deciding it. I don't know what the reason is, but there was also quite a mysterious sends announcement from Long for Life earlier this week, and one's got to wonder whether or not there's a potential conflict of interest, and he's been obliged to step away from the business. It's possible. We don't know at this stage. But yeah, I just found the tone of the statement from Bidvest to the guy who created the business over 30-something years just to be a little bit abrupt, just a bit unfriendly,
yeah,
lacking warmth.
Yeah, sure. But we have seen quite a lot of activity from Long for Life, so I imagine Brian's quite a busy guy at the moment.
Yeah, look, he's fairly unsentimental about these things, as far as I can tell. What happened to the gold price today? At one stage, it went through $1,400 an ounce. Is it all these numerous terror attacks across Europe that seem to have caused a spike?
Yeah, so we did see some activity in the gold price, and that certainly buoyed our gold counters. I think globally we are seeing a bit of risk aversion coming back. I mean, we've had a fantastic run, certainly on the international markets, and you know, maybe some uncertainty creeping back, and that's lifted the gold price. So ticking above $1,300 today, and retracing somewhat towards the close. But yeah, I mean, you know, good to see some of the gold shares starting to move.
Yeah, gold shares most certainly did move on the day. We saw Harmony up 9%. Goldfields was positive as well. Naspers is ending a solid week in a solid position, quite close to record levels for Naspers, R2,900 a share. After those very, very good results that came out of Tencent earlier this week.
Yeah, I mean, it continues to surprise. I mean, even the most bullish analysts, I think, are caught unaware with Tencent's superb results. I mean, growing revenue by 59% in the second quarter year on year. So, you know, for one of the top 10 top 10 companies in the world by market cap, it's phenomenal to see a business like Tencent still managing to grow earnings as fast as it is. And that, you know, feeding through to Naspers, which is by far the most, or by far performed the best in our market this year, really driving gains on all share.
But that is it. And to my mind, not a potentially big risk then for the entire market as a result of the fact that we've got this one company that makes up 20% of the value of the JSE. We've got Chinese investigators launching an investigation into WeChat, the social media network owned by Tencent in China. Are you a little bit uneasy about this quite tough regulatory environment into which Tencent is stepping?
Yeah, sure. I think it has been a concern for many portfolio managers. You know, when you start looking at Naspers making up 20% of the all-share index, and you know that all-share index is really used as a benchmark for us to monitor our portfolios against. You know, and that business is already being driven by Tencent, and you know, Tencent is making up more than 100% of Naspers' market cap now at current levels. So what happens with Tencent and the regulatory environment in China is incredibly important to the future of Naspers. So we certainly are watching those developments very closely.
Well, it's not just the future of Naspers, it's the future of the JSE as well, which closed the week at 55,304, down a fraction of 1% on the day. The currency steady, commodity prices, which spiked during the day, ending off their highest levels. Andrew Bryson from Sunlum Private Wealth.
The Money Show on your number one news and talk station.
Thanks, Moreno. So Moreno mentioned the Springboks are playing Argentina in PE tomorrow, and there's a new logo that you're going to see on the Springbok rugby jersey. It's the FNB logo, and they've positioned it at the back between the shoulders, and they say it's sort of the symbol of a trusting hand that gives a pat on the back, symbolizing that FNB, of course, is behind SA Rugby all the way, and they're providing this platform for talent. They've answered the call to serve South Africa as Springboks. FNB wants to use the sponsorship to try and help unite people and make a difference. In the same way as the first Rugby World Cup that we participated in 1995 united the country. And that's what FNB is hoping to do as part of a nation-building exercise. That's why they're sponsoring the Springbok rugby team. And they've been sponsoring Varsity Cup for the last decade. They've produced 30 Springbok players since 2008. So that's been a very worthwhile exercise. And also the classic clashes, the FNB classic clashes at school-level rugby for the last 16 years. Youth sport development, grassroots, and it's always been a long-term commitment for FNB as a proudly South African brand. So for more information on inspired greatness, check out FNB's Facebook or hashtag Help Inspires Greatness. Check it out now.
The Money Show. Bruce is on Twitter at Bruce Business.
The Money Show brought to you by Old Mutual. Get great financial advice. Old Mutual is a licensed financial services provider. Well, on the next Money Show, Michael Jordaan, the former chief executive at FNB, nowadays a venture capitalist with fingers in lots of pies, he's joining us for our Make Money Monday special edition as our guest. We'll also talk about the cost of private education. We'll delve into black gold with the chief executives of a private education group, Advitech, and that of petrochemicals giant Sasol. All of that happening on the next busy Money Show.
702 and Cape Talk, The Money Show.
Well, it's time to catch up on some of the best bits of The Money Show from the last week. And it's been an eventful week. The market has been topsy-turvy. Currency has also been quite fluid and commodity prices pretty strong. But one of the issues that South Africa simply cannot shake is the crisis of unemployment, but particularly youth unemployment. Anne Bernstein, she does a lot of research into this particular subject. She is the head of the Center for Development and Enterprise. She spoke to us earlier this week about their latest findings on youth unemployment. This is what she thinks about the crisis around our inability to create jobs.
We need to create jobs for the workforce we have, not the highly skilled one we wish we had. We've got to couple this with fixing our education and training system so we're getting more and more skilled people. But at the moment, you've got to say, what do we do with all these people? And it's growing. Young unemployed people are growing at 140,000 per year. And as the chairman of CDE, who's also in his spare time chairman of First Rand, he said, you know, 140,000 per year, that's like creating three First Rand companies every single year.
I mean, okay, a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. Is there the first single step that needs to be taken to get us on some kind of course that gives us a chance to break the back of the crisis? We're not going to halve unemployment in the next 5 to 10 years, but what steps can we take to at least make a beginning towards that?
There are two steps. The one is South Africa needs a strategy for rapid growth. At the moment, we have a growth destruction strategy by our leaders. So that has to change, and we have to really prioritize growth. And anything that's going to undermine growth and jobs has to be removed from the statute books or not implemented. The second is both business leaders and political and civic leaders should stop thinking about how you tackle youth unemployment with projects and initiatives. Many of these have merit, but the numbers are really marginal.
Anne Bernstein from the Center for Development and Enterprise arguing very passionately for large-scale job creation. Well, our Money Show FAQ, you always send us lots of questions and we consolidate those and we see what is really buzzing and what's going on in your brain. And this week going on in your brain is Bitcoin. So many questions around Bitcoin. And the simple question that we put to Fazam Eshani, the head of the blockchain initiative at RMB, was why is it that Bitcoin has gone so high so fast, around 65,000 Rand for a single Bitcoin this week. And I said to him, is it not a bit like the tulip bubble of the 17th century?
Right now, with Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, there's an actual use. Financial services, as we know, especially when it comes to cross-border remittances, is extremely expensive, sometimes up to 12% of the value of the payment can be taken by the intermediaries. So now with this is not just something that people think is cool. People realize, wow, this is an absolute disruptive technology to our global financial system. So given that it's a disruptive technology, given that it's scarce, in the long run, many, many people think it is absolutely very, very cheap at the moment. And they expect it to go, skyrocketing even further.
In the next 12 months, is Bitcoin more likely to go to 10,000 Rand or 100,000 Rand, sitting at 65 right now?
My personal opinion, it's only going one way, and that's up.
Well, that is the view of Farzan Nishani from RMB, talking all about the blockchain story. People are very, very excited, of course, about Bitcoin. Our Make Money Monday's guest this last week was Adrian Gore, the founder and chief executive of Discovery Holdings, talking about how his youth shaped his relationship with money. And it's a fascinating discussion. We've taken three chunks out of the discussion with Adrian Gore on Monday night.
I certainly grew up with privilege. My father was kind of a small entrepreneur, had ironically a cigarette.
No.
Yeah, really? I hate to admit it. A wholesale of cigarettes and sweets.
Cigarette. So that's what created Adrian Gore.
I remember packing 10,000 Lexington, But we had, a kind of a middle class privileged background in the apartheid era. So, I didn't want for anything. But, It was a very good time, I think, a very settled time.
Adrian Gore on Monday night. Then a fellow board member at Discovery, the former Reserve Bank governor, Tito Mboweni, whose dietary habits I think are possibly a little bit different from Adrian Gore's. He phoned in to chide the Discovery chief executive.
Well, Adrian Gore is terrible. He always gives me grass for lunch.
Wheatgrass, I hope. Something healthy, antioxidants and stuff, yes.
Very, very healthy, conscious person.
Yeah, that's what Tito Mboweni was saying. Sounds like there's not much love lost there, frankly. But I also asked Adrian Gore about when he started Discovery. And people, when you look at an overnight success that's taken a quarter of a century to build, you kind of think it's easy, don't you? You really do. But those early days for Discovery, Adrian Gore sitting in an office alone for 6 months before hiring a second person.
Close to you.
Is it true that you've still got a piece of paper on which you'd said to do, hire an actuary? Is that true?
It is true. It's in my study. It's quite humbling when I read it, how productive I was in those days.
Well, what else is written on the list?
It's product, start the systems process. It's really kind of probably 10 steps of the really big chapter headings, It really is quite humbling to see it, but I still believe that approach of keeping a list and just, making every day count.
The stuff you learn from our guests on The Money Show is something quite extraordinary. And that's why I encourage you to encourage your friends and send them the links. Go to our website, download the podcast, send the links to your friends and say, listen to this. Adrian Gore, one of the richest people in South Africa, who's got 10% or so of Discovery, which is worth 100 billion rand on the JSE. He's made a bob or two in a quarter of a century. He's done well. Whether you're a fan of his business or not, you've got to admire the business that he has created. And he was giving some really useful insights and personal finance tips on Monday night. So go download that. Download all of our podcasts. Have a listen to them if you missed some of the best bits. And that's just to entice you to do precisely that. Thank you for listening to The Money Show this week. In a moment, I'm going to do the big reveal. The first question in tonight's Brutal Biz Quiz, 2,000 Rand to give away with MTN Business. You can start calling now if you're brave enough.
It's time to put your business knowledge to the test. The Biz Quiz with MTN on The Money Show.
2,000 Rand up for grabs for the whiz of the Brutal Biz Quiz this evening. Christelle was through first. Which company's chief executive said he'll no longer fly SAA? Christelle?
It will be the CEO of First National, FNB.
FNB Jacques Salier, he tweeted he'd rather support honourable alternatives. He added, the abuse has to come to an end. And then Malusi Gigaba said, he and Jacques are such good friends. They really get on so well. He's going to talk to him about it. We don't know the outcome of that particular conversation. What did Adrian Gore's father, the chief executive of Discovery and Discovery Health, what did Adrian Gore's father sell? Christelle?
Hello, hi. cigarettes and sweets.
Cigarettes and sweets, absolutely. It's nothing short of ironic, is it? Yep, absolutely. Discovery founder and chief executive Adrian Gore was this week's Make Money Monday's guest. What was invented by Satoshi Nakamoto, Christelle?
You've got me there.
Oh, Christelle, but thank you for playing. You did very well. We like Christelle. Simpiware, what's thought to have been invented by Satoshi Nakamoto? Silence?
You got me there.
Oh, Simpiware. Everyone, I've got everybody there. I don't have you there. I'll tell you what, I'm going to have you there. If you don't get the answer right, what was invented or thought to be invented by Satoshi Nakamoto? Take your answers in a couple of minutes. What is thought to have been invented by Satoshi Nakamoto? Numisa, good evening to you. What is Satoshi Nakamoto thought to have invented?
It is Bitcoin, Bruce.
Absolutely. The name used by an unknown person or persons who designed Bitcoin and created its original reference implementation, whatever that means. What is the verb used to describe inhaling and exhaling the vapor produced by an electronic cigarette? If you're doing this sucking and exhaling thing?
Vaping.
It's not nearly as dangerous as a cigarette, but even the chief scientific officer, Philip Morris, says it's not safe. Who is the world's highest paid actress this year? Nkumisa?
This year.
She was in La La Land?
Hello? La La Land. Oh,
best God. Actress? Three, two.
I'm going to go with Meryl Streep.
You're going to go with Meryl Streep. Sorry, Nkumisa, you're not. Simon, let's try you.
Is it Emma Stone?
It is Emma Stone. No, you're not as rich as her, but you are 2,000 Rand better off, Simon. Well done, whiz of the Brutal Biz quiz at the last second. Forbes announcing this week the 28-year-old actress is this year's highest paid. She banked $26 million in a year. Stone earned most of it from her movie musical La La Land, which also won her the Best Actress Oscar. Emma Stone, the world's highest paid actress. Simon, tonight's highest paid quiz contestant, the whiz of the Biz quiz. Well done to you, Simon.